time.
So, homework 2 is due, homework 3 is on the web, and the class photo is on the web, and there is also a sign sheet over here, where I mostly need one bit of information, which is, do you allow me to put your name on the web? On the page of the class photo. Anyway, let me remind you about content. So today is Monday, so we're on the kind of most not theoretic side. And we were in the process of defining the kind of main stars, which are finite type invariants or polynomial invariants. So let me remind you, given any knot invariant of oriented knot in oriented space with values in an abelian group, we can extend it to knots with double points by setting the value of the double point to be over minus under, the value at an overcrossing minus the value of an under at an undercrossing. We think of it as a derivative, we extend it to having as many double points as you wish by doing this iteratively, so we think of it as high order derivatives, and then we say that an invariant is of type n if it is like a polynomial of degree n. So its n plus first and higher derivatives vanish, which means that the original invariant vanishes always when you extend it to any knot with more than n double points. And then we had a few examples, I think starting from the stupid example like the constants were degree zero, then we had linking numbers were degree one, and then the next example was the Jones polynomial, so we derived the following Jones-Kane relation for the Jones polynomial, and then we said, if you take the Jones polynomial and substitute q equals e to the x, then from the Skine relation, it's easy to find that, well, this thing, which is a power series in x, well, as a whole, as an invariant valued in the space of power series, it is not of finite type, or not, or at least we haven't shown that it is, and in fact it isn't. But each individual coefficient is of finite type. So if vnk denotes the coefficient of x to the k in this power series, then vn is of type n. So j is maybe not a finite type invariant, but it is a series whose coefficients are finite type. So finite type invariants have at least as much power as the Jones polynomial. Questions, comments, is this a sufficient reminder? Okay, good. So we want to study a little bit more about finite type invariants today, but first, a few, not really examples, but just I want to expose you to words, okay, to names. So there is something called the Homflipt polynomial, or maybe the Homfli polynomial. So, Homfli polynomial. So, it has a lovely history. So, soon after the Jones polynomial came out, so nobody expected the Jones polynomial. But as soon as the Jones polynomial came out, people started to look for further things in the vicinity of Jones polynomial. And four different groups, or maybe five, I don't remember, a large number of people discovered the Homfli polynomial at the same time, and then Homflipt is the acronym of the eight people who discovered it more or less at the same time. So Hoste, Okniano, Millet, Frege, Licorice, Yetter, Pshetitsky, Tracek, I think. Okay, anyway, the Homfli polynomial is defined by a similar Skene relation to the relation of the Jones polynomial. So it's something like A times Homfli of an overcrossing minus A inverse times Homfli of an undercrossing is equal to Z conflict of the oriented smoothing, and then you need to specify some initial condition. I forgot what it is. Something like h of the unknot to the power k is a minus a inverse divided by z raised to the power k minus 1, I think. Okay? Am I right, Juan? Thanks. So, again, sorry. So, the skein relation, it's not obvious that this defines an invariant. Okay, the hard thing is to show that this defines an invariant. But assuming it does, the skein relation determines it, because from the skein relation you can simplify any knot, and you can compute the conflict polynomial of anything. Again, the hard thing is to show that the end result is an invariant and that the end result is independent of how you compute it. Because there may be many ways to use the skein relation to compute it. But anyway, this done, this completely specifies the invariant, and again, and it turns out to be an invariant with values in rational functions in A and Z. And in fact, I think the denominators, it's really Laurent polynomials in A and Z. And of course, as an invariant with values in Laurent polynomials, it is not of finite type. But then there is the same phenomena where if you expand it, it becomes an invariant of finite type. So, or it becomes a finite type series. So if you set A equals, the standard, or one standard way to reparameterize it is to set A equals e to the n times x, and z equals e to the x minus e to the negative x. Maybe it's n over 2x, and this is over 2 everywhere. But again, these are normalization choices. And once you do this, you get an invariant which is a power series in x, which also depends on a variable n. And then each coefficient as a power series of x will be an invariant with values in, it turns out to be polynomials in n, and then as such, each coefficient is of finite type. And the proof is the exact same proof as for the Jones polynomial. You just rewrite this as a relation saying h of over minus h of under. So you just rewrite this as h of over minus h of under is equal to a big messy thing. But the only thing that's important about this big messy thing is that there is a factor of x that you can extract, that you can pull out. So there is a factor of x times mess, and then every double point gives you a factor of x. If you have n double points, you'll have n factors of x. If you have more than n, you'll have more than n factors of x, and then the coefficient of x to the n will have to be 0. Okay? Now, one special case of the Homfield polynomial is the case where A is equal to 1 and Z stays as it is. So you get the so-called Conway polynomial, which is the one special case that actually preceded Jones. The Conway polynomial, and again, I'm mostly stating it for cultural reasons. You should know these things, okay? But they're not going to play a major role in what we will say later. So it is defined by the relation Conway of over minus Conway of under, so basically it's just this at A equals 1, is equal to Z Conway, sorry, Z Conway of a smoothing, and then I need to specify the initial condition, so Conway of the unknot to the power k is equal to, well, it's 1 if k is 1 and 0 otherwise. So the Kronecker delta function of k and 1. Okay? And that's a polynomial, it's a polynomial in Z, very easy to show. And it turns out, and here you don't need to make any substitutions. Any coefficient of that polynomial is in itself a type N invariant. So maybe I'll write it here. So if you write C of K of Z as sum of V, G, maybe I should change the name. So VC sub N of K Z to the N, then VNC is of type N. Okay? And I think that's the end of examples. Any questions, any comments? Yes?
Question about this N capital in the previous polynomial. What does it mean, like a substitution?
It's an extra variable. Okay, so we, instead of writing it in the variables A and Z, we write it in the variables X and capital N, and it's just an extra variable. Now, there is a reason, okay, there is a reason why it's called capital N, and it's related to the fact that it comes from the group SUN, and in fact, later it will make sense, later we will see in what sense it comes from the group SUN, and then to come from the group SUN, N would have to be an integer, okay? But at the moment, it's only a change of variable, it's only a reparametrization, okay? Okay. Okay, so, well, so finite type invariants seem natural, they're like polynomials, and there are lots of examples, and kind of all classical not polynomials, are finite type series. So finite type invariants as a whole are at least as strong as all classical not polynomials, or maybe not classical, as all quantum not polynomials, as they are called, taken together. Okay? So the next thing you want to do is to classify all of them. So how do we classify, or how do we find all type N invariants? So the idea is to say, in the same way as finding all polynomials, or in a similar way to how you might find all polynomials. So you study the highest coefficient. Okay? So the idea is if V is of type n, then, well, the n plus first derivative should be 0. But the top coefficient, the nth derivative of v, or more precisely, this is the same as v restricted to nodes that have exactly n double points. So this should be, in some sense, a constant. And constants should be easy to classify. Okay? Except, you know, it's like polynomials in a high-dimensional space. It's not a single constant. It's a system of constants, depending on in which direction you differentiate. Okay? Furthermore, in some sense, studying these constants is inductively equivalent to studying all finite type invariants. So suppose you study degree zero invariants by some independent means, in fact degree minus one invariants would suffice, or minus infinity. Then, now suppose you're given two degree n invariants. If their nth derivatives are equal, so if the restriction to knots with n double points are equal, then their difference has a vanishing nth derivative. So their difference will vanish on knots with n double points. So the difference is really an invariant of type n minus 1. And by induction, we assume that we've already studied these. Okay? So at least in some inductive sense, if you want to study type n invariants, it's enough to study their top derivatives. Okay? So anyway, in what sense is this a constant? So let's see. Let's check. So you see, consider V. So now I'm fixing V, a type n invariant, and consider V evaluated on a knot with exactly n double points, and suppose it has one further overcrossing somewhere. Okay? And then let's compare this with V evaluated on a knot with the exact same n double points, and that further double point, that further crossing, replaced by an undercrossing. Okay? Well, the difference is by definition V evaluated on a knot with those n double points and the further one. So by definition, it's equal to zero. No, I mean, by the fact that V is of type n. So therefore, V on a knot with n double point is independent of crossing changes. Okay? So V restricted to knots with exactly n double points does not depend on the embedding, on the topology of the embedding. You can flip crossings, you can go from, you know, suppose you have a knot with n double points and another one, you can just deform one to the other. Does not depend on the topology of the embedding. I'll make it a little bit more precise in a minute, but even before, let's try to think. So what does it depend on? What does remain for it to depend on? Okay? So what is it that we cannot change by flipping over crossings? So you see, we no longer care about the ambient space. We no longer care about how a knot is embedded in space. But walking on the knot, you would still be walking, well, you would be still walking along a circle, and you will be going through the double points in a certain order. And you will be going through those, through each of these double points twice. Right, because each double point appears twice, is a double point. So you will be walking through the double points, and you will be passing through each one twice, and the order by which you would be passing through these double points is not going to change when you flip an overcrossing to an undercrossing. So what remains is that ordering of the double points. Okay? So let me make it a bit more, give a few examples.
So take, for example, the following note with double points. Okay? So when I walk along this note, well, the parameter space is a circle, and I sort of, if I start here, this would correspond to that point, then I go through point number one, so I can mark I've been at point number one. Then I can mark that I've go through point number one once again. Then I'd be going through point number two, so I should be marking that I'm going through point number two, and then I should be going through point, and then I'd be going through point number two again. So the pattern is 1, 1, 2, 2. Okay? But you see, the ones and the twos were artificial. The points were not numbered to start with. So the only real content in this pattern is that I went through one point and then again through the same one, and then through a second point and then again through the second. So the only pattern, the only content is which pairs of points on the parameters space get identified in the image, get mapped to the same point in the image. Likewise, let's look at a slightly more complicated knot. I can never draw things. Okay, here. Just complain, but I did okay. So, in which order do I go through the double points here? So, if this is 1 and this is 2, and let's say I start here, I go through 1, 2, 1, 2. Okay? So, I go through 1, 2, 1, 2. And then, but again, the numbers don't matter. The only thing that matters is the pairing, so they're paired in this way. Okay? So if this is what we call a two singular knot, this is what I would call a two chord diagram. And this is another example of a two chord diagram. So the moral is V depends only on the N chord diagram underlying an N singular knot on which it is evaluated. Okay? So this actually requires a proof. Okay? So maybe rather than proving it, I will just state what is required. Okay? So first of all, there is a map K goes to the diagram underlying K of N singular knots to N chord diagrams. And I think I've only defined the map by examples, but I think it's clear how to continue the I think the map is clear. The map is clear. Basically, if you have an N singular knot, you look at the set. You look at the circle and the set of pairs of points on the circle that get identified in the image, and any such pair will represent a chord. Okay. So there is such a map, and then I want to claim two things. One, if
the diagram of a knot K1 is equal to the diagram of a knot K2, then you can get, you can get from K1 to K2 by a sequence of crossing changes. Okay? So really the only information that stays if you allow to switch crossing changes is the core diagram. And the second point is that any n-chord diagram is the diagram underlying an n singular knot K for some K. So if you, well, any chord diagram can be implemented. So maybe very, very briefly, I'll tell you why both of these things are true. So maybe I'll start from two because it's easier. So suppose you had a chord diagram, I'll prove by example, okay? So suppose you had a chord diagram with three chords and you wanted to make it the chord diagram of a knot, okay, of an n singular knot. One way to do it would be, well, you see, I want, okay, I want to construct a knot that will have double points between the sort of corresponding ends of the chords. So what I'll do is I will pull sort of fingers, right? I want a double point between this point in the parameter space and that point in the parameter space. So I'll just pull fingers, a finger from here and a finger from here, make a double point and come back. Then I'll do the same down here. And I'll do the same for the last one. And here, I've created a knot, an n singular knot, whose underlying chord diagram is this one. Okay? Well, of course, this was not unique, but I never claimed it was unique. And the proof of one. So, I want to show that given a chord diagram, there is essentially a unique knot up to crossing changes that represents it. So what you do is, well, okay, any knot with that underlying chord diagram will have n double points, and the n double points will be embedded in R3 somewhere, in some place, okay? You can always deform the knot so that these n double points are in some specified places. You just decide where to put them. You can always deform the knot to bring them wherever you want. Okay? So you deform the knot so that these n double points are in some fixed generic places. Now, the chord diagram gives you the further information of, well, you see, what information does the chord diagram gives you? So near each chord, there are four sort of parts of the parameter space of the knot. Like what comes out of the left end of the chord, what goes into the left end of the chord, basically, okay? And these four things are exactly the four stubs that come out near each double point. And the information in the chord diagram is that, well, when you come out of this chord at that place, you'll be going into that chord in that place. So basically, the core diagram will tell you that you have to connect this to this, and this to that, and then this to that, and so on. And of course, it's not unique. There are many ways to do it. But if these places are sufficiently generic, if these points are sufficiently generic, I wish I had a colored chalk, and furthermore, if these four n points were placed in sufficiently generic places, you could just say, let's go from here to here on a straight line. Right? If these are generic points and the straight line between any two points in R4, straight lines between generic points in R4 do not intersect. Okay? So you could just go by a straight line from here to here. But then, if you had another embedding, you could always deform each of the arcs to be a straight line while avoiding all of these points. And every time you encounter a trouble deforming a line to the straight line, well, I mean, you might need to cross something that's already there, but you're allowed to do crossing changes. So that's it. Okay? So again, that's not a complete proof, but I think it's a reasonable sketch. Okay. Anyway, so what do we get out of it? So, moral. So, the nth derivative of an invariant V defines a functional which I will call W going from Dn. So, Dn is set of all n chord diagrams, okay, into whatever the underlying abelian group was, the group of values. How? By if you have D, which is an n chord diagram. You map it into the nth derivative of the original invariant V, evaluated on some n singular not k, where the underlying core diagram of k is the diagram D. And such a k always exists by point 2 over here. And it doesn't matter which one you choose by point 1 combined with the fact that the nth derivative is a constant. Okay? Maybe I'll change just a little bit. So rather than letting Dn be the set of all n chord diagrams, I will allow formal linear combinations. So rather than thinking of it as a set, think of it as a vector space, I suppose, if A, whose basis is the set of all chord diagrams. Except A is an abelian group, so it's not a vector space, it's a module, or it's an A, I don't know what it is, an A algebra. Okay? Set of linear combinations with coefficients in A. So let me change it to be a vector space, and the definition still works, I'm just defining on a basis. Okay. Okay, so moral, so we've already proven a minor theorem. So theorem, I could probably say it for general abelian groups, but let me restrict my attention to the rational numbers just because I don't want to to get confused about formulation in algebra, yes?
I don't immediately see why Dn is an abelian group.
Why? Dn is an abelian group?
Vn.
Vn?
Yeah.
It's not an abelian group. No, no, no. Vn is an invariant. V is an invariant of knots with values in an abelian group.
What is this group?
Whatever. We're talking about a finite type invariant. A finite type invariant takes values in some group.
Okay.
Okay? So typically the group will be the rational numbers or the real numbers or some set of polynomials or something. Okay? So, but the nth derivative will take values in the same group. So hence, Vnk is takes values in some group. It's not a group, it's in a group. Okay? Anyway, theorem, at least over Q, and you can, at least over a field, you know what, it doesn't matter which field, at least over a field, the vector space of type N invariants is finite dimensional. Okay? Proof? Well, let's prove it by induction on N. Okay? So assume we already know it for type N minus 1. Then, suppose you have two invariants of type N. Okay? Or, you know what, basically, if their difference is zero, sorry, if the difference of their weight systems is zero, then they differ by something of type N minus 1, which we've already shown is finite dimensional. Okay? So the only thing to look at is their weight systems. Oops, sorry, I forgot to call this functional the weight system. So the only thing to look at is their weight systems, and weight systems are functionals on a finite dimensional vector space. Okay? A vector space, the space of all n chord diagrams, which is finite. Might be growing as n grows, but it's finite. If you want a slightly more precise formulation of this, basically we have constructed a short exact sequence. So if calligraphic V sub n denotes the space of all degree n invariants, then we have constructed a short sequence of the form Vn minus 1 goes into Vn. So if you have a type N minus 1 invariant, it is also a type N invariant. If you have a type N invariant, you can consider its weight system. So you get an element of Dn dual. Okay? And this sequence is exact over here. Namely, well, if you have a type N invariant whose weight system is zero, whose nth derivative is zero, then it's a type N minus 1 invariant. Having exactness over here, and finite dimensionality here and here, proves finite dimensionality here. Okay. Good. But we're not done. You see, we don't just want to classify... We want to find all finite type invariants. And then the question is... Well, well, is, does every linear functional on Dn come from an invariant? Or in other words, is this map here surjective? If this map here was surjective, so if I could extend the exact sequence, then the space in the middle would be, well, since we're talking temporarily at least about vector spaces, it would be the direct sum of the two spaces on the sides, yes?
I'm just a little confused about the terminology.
Yeah?
So we've fixed a finite type invariant.
Yeah.
And then you're looking at how it evaluates on the chord diagrams.
Yeah.
And so what is the weight system of the fixed finite type invariant?
It's a functional on chord diagrams.
So it's just the one functional.
So W is what I will call the weight system of V.
Okay, all right. That's clear now.
So the weight system of V is just the nth derivative of V. Okay? So this is just a different name for V differentiated n times. Except when I think of V differentiated n times, I think of it as a functional on n singular knots. And n singular knots, given this theorem, are the same in as much as type n invariants are concerned with chord diagrams. So the weight system is a functional on chord diagrams.
It's clear now.
Okay. Anyway, again, had this map been surjective, it isn't, by the way, completely isn't. But had it been surjective, the space in the middle would be the direct sum of these two. This one I understood yesterday by induction, so I'm studying this one today. This one is easy to understand. It's just a space of, linear functionals on some combinatorially defined space, so I'm done. So, well, it's not onto, it's not exact here, but I can at least figure out what's missing, okay? So that's the next question. So, does every W coming inside Dn dual come from a V? Okay? And the answer is no for two reasons. So no, and here are the two reasons. So reason number one. So consider you have a knot, consider a knot that has in it a double point that sort of bounds a kink. Okay? Then this will get expanded to an overcrossing minus an undercrossing. But as knots, these two are the same. So this is really zero. So the moral is that V evaluated on such a thing, no matter what V is, okay, will be zero, always. So if you have another n minus 1 double points here, then you have that V evaluated on some n singular knot is always equal to zero. But an n singular knot is just a chord diagram. So the moral is that W, or maybe I should have called it the W of V, just to be specific, which and where it came from. So the weight system of V evaluated on some chord diagram is equal to zero. But therefore, that's a condition on W. So not every W comes from an invariant. But which chord diagram will it be? So the distinguishing feature of this chord diagram is that it has a very short chord. It has a chord which starts and ends in nearby points in the parameter space. So it has a chord with a short chord. Now, what does short chord means? I mean, we're in topology. The word short has no meaning, but what it really means is that no other endpoints of any other chord is between the two endpoints of that chord. So the other n minus 1 chords lie somewhere else, but nothing comes between the two endpoints of this chord. Okay? So this is the so-called, so W of V satisfies the so-called framing independence, relation, which means that it vanishes on diagrams that have a short chord. So that's reason number one. And reason number two is more fun. Oh, I guess I should have said, I mean, just for completeness, if you have a diagram like this, you can always find an n singular knot that has a kink, which represents it. So therefore, this always applies. Okay. So, reason two. So, consider the following picture. So, suppose you have a knot with somewhere a double point, and then some other piece of the knot that lassos around that double point from below, okay? And then some n minus 2 double points somewhere else, I don't care where. Suppose you have a knot like this. I want to compare it with a similar knot in which the lasso, instead of going like below, goes above. So everything is exactly the same. The other n minus 2 double points are in the same places, but the only change is that you flipped those four crossings. Okay? So now compare V evaluated on this with V evaluated on that. On the one hand, these two knots are in fact the same, because I can slide the lasso out underneath and then push it back in above. So topologically, these two knots are the same, as even as n minus 1 singular knots. So their invariant is the same. So on the one hand, this is 0. On the other hand, I could have reached from this knot to that knot by another way. I could have flipped this crossing, then flipped this crossing, then flipped this crossing, then flipped this crossing. So the sum of four crossing flips is equal to 0. But each time you flip a crossing, you will have exactly n double points. Because you have n minus 2 here, 1 here, and the crossing you flipped. So the conclusion is that V evaluated on K1, plus or minus, we have to check the signs, V evaluated on K2 plus or minus V evaluated on K3 plus or minus V evaluated on K4 is equal to 0, where K1 through K4 are the four n singular knots that you get by replacing one of those double points, one of those crossings by a double point.
where ki are n singular. But you see, if you have an n singular knot, it is represented by an n singular, sorry, by an n chord diagram. So the conclusion is that 0 is equal to WV evaluated on D1 plus or minus WV evaluated on D2 plus or minus up to WV evaluated on D4. So we found that a certain linear combination of four chord diagrams evaluates to 0. Okay? But I think I ran out of time, so I will have to say which linear combination it is next time. Okay?